This audio message will serve as a warning and a disclaimer that this particular episode of the Delta Flyers podcast will contain discussion of the topic of suicide. The Delta Flyers, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong, in no way, shape, or form condone suicide. If you happen to be struggling with thoughts of suicide, we urge you to contact your local suicide prevention hotline number. We will try to include as many numbers as possible in the show notes for this podcast episode. Thank you for listening, and live long and prosper.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Hello. How are you, sir? Hello, ladies and germs.
Hello.
That's a COVID joke. Ladies and germs. Get it?
Yes. You didn't come up with that. We've heard that for many, many, many years.
Many years. It's an oldie
but goodie.
Lighthearted. It's an oldie but goodie that I think is good to bring back during COVID times. Ladies and germs.
Ladies and viruses. How often do you have to take a test for your work at this point?
Twice a week. I have been tested at least twice a week. On my last show that I was doing August and September and part of October, we were doing 3 days a week on that show. Currently we're doing mostly two, sometimes we're adding a third depending on the work week, but
it's
a lot.
And you know, I've been working on an acting gig, and so then they are testing me all the time, like every before I go to work. Every time I have to go to work, I have to test. So and it's been crazy. It really has been. Are you doing throat or nasal swabbing?
Nasal swabbing, lower nasal swabs, not the brain tickler, not the one that goes way in the back.
Right.
But the lower nasal swab.
That's still uncomfortable and not cool too. Even the lower one. I've had the lower one too. It's just like,
I've done a spit test, which
I did that one too.
I've done that one. I've done the lower nasal swab, the upper nasal, which was very painful. There's a lot of different.
We've done all three. I've done upper, lower nasal, and I've done spit.
Thing.
And that's the one where you kind of cough your spit up kind of a thing.
I guess so. I don't remember. This is getting too detailed for me.
Is it TMI?
It's TMI. Yes, it's TMI. Let's just stick to ladies and germs.
Let's just stick to the
ladies and germs.
Ladies and germs is good.
Welcome to the Delta Flyers, ladies and germs. Yeah, here we are. What is the episode this week that we're talking
about? Death Wish.
Death Wish. Oh.
What an ominous name.
Oh,
Death Wish.
Death Wish. I forgot. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Death Wish. I'm excited.
Yes, I'm excited too. Let's go watch this. Come back and let's recap and give everyone our thoughts on this episode. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for What Do We Remember? I don't know why I did that way.
You're silly.
I know.
This is a classic for Voyager, actually. I remember a lot of things now that we're back.
This was a thinking episode. This is an episode that just makes you go, oh my gosh. It's like there's a lot of depth to this episode, right?
Agreed.
So I'm gonna see if you want to throw out your limerick first to start off.
I will throw out my limerick.
I'll follow with the
roll down here. So I just want to say with my limerick, like, one thing that happened early in this episode is Chakotay says, do you know it looks, feels, and tastes like a comet? And I just couldn't stop thinking about that he tasted He looks, feels, and tastes like a comet. Okay, so with that said, I'm going to give you my limerick. On the comet crust, Chakotay liked to chew. But transported over from inside was a cue. He wanted to die. Janeway broke the tie. So Q put the continuum in his rear view.
Oh, sir. Okay. That okay. was impressive. Okay. Oh, man.
Smooth.
I'm smooth.
Okay, that's my limerick.
Pat yourself on the back. Pat yourself on the back. That was really, really impressive. What the heck, man? Did you overtime on that?
I did have a little help from Rebecca on that because I was stumped on some of the rhymes. So, well, yeah, you know, teamwork.
You credited RJ for that. So good one on Rebecca. Okay, yes. So that is really, really funny.
That was teamwork.
All right. Okay, ready for your haiku.
Haiku time.
Here we go. Q beamed aboard ship, makes request for asylum. Janeway grants his wish.
Whoa.
ASMR.
Whoa. Oh, interesting. This is a hard one. Like, that's a great haiku. I'm very impressed. I'm always impressed with the haiku because they're so kind of, they're like, you know, impressionistic. They are little tastes, right? So you don't have to give the whole meal. It's like an appetizer. It can be so meaningful and symbolic. Totally. And
you're not eating the whole comet. It's just a little bit of the comet.
Just a bite of the comet crust.
Just a little bite.
Yes.
That was a funny line. You're right. But
I will say it was very funny. I will say this episode is hard to capture in even a haiku or a limerick or a synopsis because it's a very complicated subject matter, I guess, is what I will start with my overview of, like, this is a tricky episode. The subject matter of suicide, let's just, you know, talk about what it is. Talking about suicide is a very uncomfortable, it can be, and I think for most people, is a very uncomfortable subject. And so I thought this was a really interesting episode in terms of its sort of intellectual challenges that it presented. It was not an action-packed episode. We didn't go, you know, we weren't having space battles, and there was very little adventure in it, honestly. You know, they went to the one scene where they go to the continuum, and it's kind of a a pretty but boring place. I mean, you sort of get why Quinn is like, I can't do this anymore. Like, there's nothing to hope for. There's nothing stimulating about this. Everything's been done. Life has been lived. I'm done. I'm ready to stop.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots to talk about with this episode, but
yeah, let me just, before I forget, you talked about, you know, the continuum being kind of a boring place. They depicted it's very obvious it was shot in the, you know, California desert. You can see Joshua trees in the background there. And as much as, you know, Janeway sort of said, this is it. You know, she's sort of like, wow, this is like nothing. But to me as an actor, I'm like, oh God, I would have dreamed to be on location right there. That would have been wonderful because, you know, Kim's always on the damn ship. I very rare, you know, a lot of times when everyone gets to shoot in a different setting where they're utilizing, you know, modern day backgrounds and maybe, you know, whatnot out in the middle of the California desert, Kim is always on the damn ship. And in this episode, that desert looked wonderful to me. So I'm just going to throw that note out there.
Yeah. I think that often with our show, when we were able to go out, they didn't go out very often on location, but when we did, it was really beautiful scenery. It was out to, you know, the dry lake beds or out to Joshua Tree or out to Lone Pine or some of these places that were just really beautiful, beautiful, you know, locations. So yeah, I know what you mean. I looked at that and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. That actually looks pretty cool. All right. So this episode was directed by James Conway. I had forgotten that he directed this one.
Yes. Jimmy Conway.
Jim Conway directed it. Michael Piller wrote the script based on a story by his son, Sean Piller.
Yes. And Sean Piller, who is 4 years, you are 4 years older than me. Sean Piller is 4 years younger than me. So when he submitted this storyline, I calculated this. He was, I think, at the tender age of 23, something around there.
I think he had just graduated from film school.
That sounds about right.
Was in film school or something like that. Because I do remember Michael Piller talking about his son. And Sean is his stepson, although I think Michael raised Sean most of his life. So I know Sean, and Sean took Michael's last name. So certainly Michael was like the father figure for Sean in his life.
I don't know if you recall, but Sean actually came on set during this filming of this episode.
Oh, I think I do remember him coming down. Yeah.
And that's very rare. I mean, people that sell stories to Voyager, they don't usually show up on the set. But of course, Sean, being Michael Piller, the executive producer of a Voyager's son, has a little bit more carte blanche, you know, in terms of appearing and showing up on set. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is pretty cool. You know, the executive producer's son actually sold a storyline to our show, which is great. You know, is it nepotism? I mean, Sean Piller is a talented guy. I mean, as you know now, I mean, I think he lives in Vancouver or Toronto right at this point.
I think he lives in Toronto now.
He's been producing shows and whatnot and writing for God knows how long. That's his life. So he's definitely gone on to have a wonderful career. But it was just so nice to be able to see, Sean and meet him for the first time. And I was very proud of the fact that he was able to sell that story to the show.
So well, it's a very complicated story. It really is. And for a 23-year-old to come up with this story, whatever version, often stories are conceived, the story could have been, I don't know what Sean's story is. He may have come up with all of the details and aspects of this story, or he may have just come up simply with like a couple sentences that said something like, a new Q appears on Voyager and doesn't want to be immortal. And the old Q shows up and they have to debate. Janeway has to decide whether Q can die or not, period. Yeah. That might have been the whole story idea. And based on that, the writing staff and the writers start to flesh it out. And, often that's all that is pitched as a story, but it's enough of an idea. It's the essence of the idea that then gets developed.
Definitely. So we do not, and this is something that I would love to ask Sean at some point, how, when you pitched this, was it sort of a one-liner pitch where you just get a very brief pitch? Or was it more extensive where you really kind of, you broke it down into acts and this and that? Because when it, and people don't realize that some of the pitches are very, very short. The very first scene, did you notice? You're not in that scene.
What?
Janeway's standing at your station on the bridge. The first time we go to the bridge and you're nowhere to be found. Well, where are you?
Let's revisit something that I think we may have mentioned very early in this podcast. I may have told this story. I don't recall. Or maybe it was on the Jonathan Frakes portion of one of our interviews with Jonathan, but this was the episode where that famous phrase, "You're the one who wanted to go home, Robbie," came from. This is the episode.
Are you sure?
Jim Conway was directing and I was on the bridge. We were all on the bridge and that work had been scheduled for the second half of the day. And they were doing the whole trial, some of the trial scenes, particularly the one with Frakes and Ginsberg, Maury Ginsberg and Isaac Newton. They were doing that scene in the briefing room. And then they were coming on the bridge to do our bridge work. And I had said, hey, my kid has a little league game, or there was something important that I wanted to try to make with my kid that day. So I had mentioned it. And they were behind. They were way behind because every time I came on stage, I remember hearing laughter and silliness in the briefing room. And it seemed a little behind. And so when they got to the bridge, I was there. I had asked, I really want to get out of here. Can I get shot out first? I'd love to get to my kids thing. And so when they finally, we were waiting for Jim Conway and those guys to come in from the other set. And I think I might've been laughing about something or making a joke. And Jim walked in very frustrated being behind, which I get as a director, I get frustrated when I'm behind too. But he walked in and he sort of snapped at me and said, because I was the one that happened to be laughing in the moment or whatever was going on. And he was like, "You're the one who wants to go home early, Robbie." And I remember when he said that, I took it so personally. And I was like, wait a minute. I can't remember what I said to Jim. And I love Jim. He's a great guy. But I remember in that moment kind of going, wait a minute. Don't snap at me because the other scene is 2 hours behind. Like, yeah, I wanted to go. But anyway, that's this episode. Enough.
Okay. Can I give everyone my take of it? Like, that's your view, but I saw it too. I was there. Okay.
Oh, you were. Okay.
Yes. They were not coming from the briefing room over into the bridge. We were already on the bridge filming. We were already in the midst of filming and you were sitting down there. Yes. You were sitting down there. You're holding your buck. And you made some funny comment. Like you were, you know, like how you are, you're a funny guy. So you made a funny comment. People started laughing and that pissed Conway off because he felt like you were, you know, and then he said, and the way you said it, he was like, "You're the one that want to go home early, Robbie." Actually, he said your name first. He goes, "Robbie, you're the one who wanted to go home early." And I looked at your face and you were like, oh. I mean, you just had this look of like, what the, how dare how you? Dare and the thing, and what it was if, I would have to honestly say in 7 years, I've never seen a director of ours rebuke an actor except for that one time. That is the only time that any director
like point out like an individual actor to make a lesson of them, an example of them.
Yes. And he said it out loud so that everybody heard it. That's what I took offense to because I thought, if I'm directing and I have a problem with an actor, I'm going to go down to that actor. And same thing with you, and when you're a director, you know, in the times that you've had to deal with actors, maybe an actor is misbehaving or doing something, you'll usually come down, I'm guessing, and talk to them in private. You know, you're not going to sit there and embarrass them in front of the entire school, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
So, and when he did that your response was, you were so, oh God, you were so verklempt by that comment. I remember
I was really angry.
You were
surprised.
Trying to come up with a comeback and you kind of went, well, okay, Jim, like that. Like, I mean, whatever you came up with really, really not.
I thought I said something like, it's not my fault that you're 2 hours behind or something. I thought I said
you didn't. No. You may have thought
joke is not why you guys are frustrated. It's because you're 2 hours behind that you're frustrated. Not my joke. But anyway, that's this episode. So when you say like you weren't on the bridge for that opening scene, I wonder if I had gotten myself out of that scene.
Maybe.
Like maybe I had said, do you really need me in this scene? I don't say anything. Like, can I
don't know.
Can I go see my kids thing?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know.
But that's this episode.
That's so crazy. Cause I remember that happening later, like season 4 or 5, but it's here. Okay. Yep. Wow, this episode really has some triggers for you, my friend.
Yes,
I would have to say in that opening scene, what was of note to me is that Janeway is standing in your station, basically. She's and B'Elanna is off to in that side station, off to the right, near Tuvok, and so she talks to B'Elanna, and then she asks me to do something. And then when I respond to her, it's clear that my eyeline is off. It's like, what am I looking like? Where they directed me to look, where Jim directed me to look, I should have looked further right to see Janeway, but instead it would look like I was looking at the left or something, like to the left of you if you're facing the view screen. So, and so I just wanted to bring up just so the fans and everyone out there listening can understand that a lot of times, you know, when we're filming, especially on our close-ups, they'll give us an eye line that has nowhere near where the other person should be. Like in that case, that was off. But other times, to make it look right, they'll say, okay, look at the corner of the mat box, the right corner right here. They'll put a little X right there.
And the mat box is that piece of plastic on the front of the lens that mm-hmm. keeps the glare from going in the lens. So yeah. Sometimes you're looking right next to the lens.
Yeah, you're looking right next to the lens, which is, you would agree, at least for me, every time I have to do that, it's awkward because like you're hearing the other actors say the lines and they're like off to the, far right, but yet you're looking right to the left or just to the right of the map box, and you're acting with a piece of plastic or a little piece of tape, that's like put an X, and then you're trying to keep up mm-hmm. your intention and your motivation, and you're going through all your rigmaroles as an actor.
It's very difficult looking at a piece of tape, or sometimes they would take what's called a C stand, which is that stand you see on film sets, and they put a piece of a black flag, which is like a piece of
velvet, square fabric
fabric that's maybe 2x3 or something, and they'd put an X of tape on that, and then they'd raise it up in the air, and that would be your eye line for an alien or
species 8472.
Yeah, and you'd be looking at this thing on a stand with a square on it, an X. Yeah, it can be very strange sometimes.
Yeah, it's just off-putting, and it just and for those aspiring actors out there, that's when you've got to focus even more on listening to what the other actor is saying and the given circumstances of your scene, so that it doesn't pull you out, so that you're not thinking, this is ridiculous. I'm not even looking at the actor. I'm looking at a piece of tape on a black fabric, or looking at just to the right of the camera. Well, it's a challenge for sure. Yeah. Okay, what we've learned is that Welsh rabbit is what Janeway's grandfather used to make for her.
Yes. And Neelix doesn't know what a rabbit is. He's like, what's a rabbit? He's like, are you interviewing a replacement?
A replacement chef?
He's worried about being replaced.
I'd also like to say that this is the episode where there are three Garretts in this episode. There are three Roberts on Voyager, right? Robert Duncan McNeil, Robert Picardo, and Robert Beltran. But there are three Garretts. The Q2, which I call him Q2, the secondary Q, is played by Gerrit Graham. He spells his name G-E-R-R-I-T, which is the Dutch spelling. Mm-hmm. It's the Dutch spelling, and it means brave with the spear is what Garrett means. So there's that Garrett. Then there's Garrett me. And there is also in that initial scene where we talk about Welsh Rabbit, you see the camera pan across and you see all the extras, all the background actors that are in there. Ayala's there. Tarek Ergin is standing up there. But there's also an Asian gentleman with slicked back hair in gold uniform. Yet once again, I don't know what it is. They've got to put every Asian person in a gold uniform. That's Garrett Sato, my friend Garrett Sato. So he's from Hawaii. So I think that's a little piece of trivia. Three Garretts in this episode. Exactly.
Nice.
All right.
We learn in that scene that Q is being held against his will in this comet and that he wants to die. We learn that for the first time.
Yeah,
and I love the moment. I was very moved by the moment where he meets Cass, and he knows immediately. He's like, "Oh, you have such a short lifespan, 9 years." And he's really emotional about that, which was early in the episode, just a really touching moment and interesting moment.
Yeah,
and then he goes and does his thing, and all the men disappear, which I thought was was fascinating and a great setup for Q John Delancey, Q1, to show up and be, the male chauvinist that he is and make all the comments about the Valkyrie. What did the Valkyrie take over this ship? It's all women here.
Yeah. Ship of Valkyries. Yes.
Yeah. The ship of Valkyries.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What do you think of his the hand movement? Do you think he came up with that? Was that written in the script? He did this little, which is very Janeway-esque, because Janeway does the double finger thing, mm-hmm. you know, a lot. She'll point towards things with double finger. And this guy did like a swirl and a up movement, whereas Delancey does a snap whenever he does a cue thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if that was just an actor decision or not. I thought that was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved Delancey's line. Did anyone ever tell you you're angry when you're beautiful?
You're beautiful.
I loved it. It's like, God, what a chauvinist.
It's so cute. We're in the scene where Chakotay, where you say we're under attack, and Chakotay goes, by a ship. And then you go, by. I almost thought it was a glitch because, like, you just kept repeating by. And bye. I was like, by.
Bye. That's when we were like at the subatomic level, and there was
yes, that's right. You went Sling Blade on us though. Bye. Bye. Yeah,
that's funny. Well, we become subatomic, and then we became a cool Christmas tree ornament.
Yes,
I love that moment when we're a Christmas tree ornament, because we really were a Christmas tree ornament.
So that's what I wrote down. My notes were, Did this scene predate the actual Hallmark Voyager ship Christmas ornament?
I don't think so. I think they came out with that the very first Christmas.
The first Christmas?
Yeah, I think so.
Really? Because I kept thinking, well, maybe this is what gave them the idea to have the Christmas ornament as a ship. But regardless, it was funny. All I thought about was Hallmark.
Me too. I thought about the Hallmark Christmas tree Voyager. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I loved Delancey looking inside, and, you know, that whole point of view.
That was nice.
And then he sort of climbed in. He climbed in the view screen. Do you remember that? And sort of laid down on the view screen.
He had that sort of playgirl pose that he was doing over there. Yeah. That was different. Why do Qs have dark colored lip color? What's up with that?
Well, the Quinn Q2 did not have dark color. I think
he did in certain scenes, though, Robbie. Certain scenes in certain light. The thing is, Delancey's lips are bigger and fuller than Garrett Graham's. Garrett Graham's are thinner. But in certain lights, I did see the darker coloring on his lips, too.
I think it was just a choice when Delancey first came on as Q, creating this character.
In TNG.
Yeah, I think so.
They gave him the dark lips then.
I think so. Yeah.
Maybe Q's love eating chocolate, and that's just a stain from chocolate.
Wasn't the first time we saw Q in TNG, he had that whole, the Q costume, the big fancy, the black hat, and it was there was a lot of black in that costume.
Yeah.
So I bet they did this black lipstick to sort of be part of the whole package. And then when he came on our show, he was just in one of our Starfleet uniforms.
Yeah.
But they were like, well, we got to keep the black lipstick, because it wasn't, that wouldn't be makeup. That would just be part of what your lip color was. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
That would make sense to me, that they sort of got stuck with it, with the original design of his costume and everything. So finally, Janeway's like, you know, I can't take this anymore. And she agrees to hear arguments for his asylum, for Q2 wants asylum. And Delancey Q says, all right, if you win this argument, then we will agree to make you mortal and you can kill yourself.
Yeah.
That's how confident he is that he's not going to lose this. Yeah. So it's off we go. The trial of Q's.
Yes. I want to add that Delancey would have made a great Vulcan with the amount of eyebrow raises he does throughout this episode. Yes. He's so good at not everyone can independently raise one eyebrow that much higher than the other one. And he does such a great job at that. That's just one of my notes here.
We do see Delancey. I did notice he says at one point, yes, let's do this trial, Janeway, and we'll see if the pants really fit. And he looks at her butt.
He does.
Did you notice that?
Her bum. Yeah, we'll he see checks
if
her bum
the, he goes, we'll see if the, and he pauses and looks down at her bum.
Yeah.
And he goes, the pants really fit. Yeah. I found a lot of chauvinistic comments from Q, yes. Delancey Q. Yeah. But I think that he's kind of superior to everybody. Like, he was superior to Picard. He's superior to, he just had an ego and a, yeah. and a cockiness with everyone. Yeah. But it sort of played out as a chauvinistic sort of angle with the with
yeah, Janeway. that wasn't the only gender kind of, you know, offensive comment. He made another one, or I can't remember what it was now, but
yeah,
it was also very just like, ooh,
yeah, he was definitely mixing it up in the gender assaults on her and comments and criticisms and snarky comments that he would make. But I think that's very much his character. People love that character. They love Q.
Mm-hmm.
So that's true. We come back in the next act and Tuvok is in his quarters reading, and all of a sudden Quinn appears right up in his face.
Mm-hmm.
And Tuvok says, have the Q always had an absence of manners, or is it the result of some natural evolutionary process that comes with omnipotence? I thought that was amazing. I loved his reading of that line. Have the Q always had an absence of manners? Oh, so good.
That was a good line.
Tim Russ is just, that was a good line. Awesome.
He is good. I was thinking that too when I was going through this episode. I'm like, Tim is so damn good as a Vulcan. It's just,
he's
like
really good. Yeah, he was really good as the lawyer.
Yes, and my joke is, as long as I've been going to conventions, is that the reason why he's so good at his character is because he is truly Vulcan in real life. That's why.
Yes,
he's so damn good.
I love that Q2 or Quinn, as we learn to call him, he talks about how the Q appear omnipotent, but they're not. They have evolved, but they've sacrificed a lot, he says.
Mm-hmm.
And we also learn that Tuvok says, you know, Vulcans practice ritual suicide, which I thought was very interesting because I did not know that about Vulcans, that they practiced ritual suicide, that they allowed it. And it seemed, because we know Vulcans live a very long life. He said when they become sick or infirmed, that it is common that they allow and support ritual suicide.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, it makes sense with Vulcans who are looking at this from a logical place and an empathetic place without emotion. I thought it made a lot of sense. So it was interesting to hear that.
Well, they also make mention that, you know, in the court proceedings, I guess they make mention of many cultures utilize suicide. But when it comes to Western cultures, specifically Christian-based societies like the United States, suicide is a sin, you know, in the body. You're not supposed to kill yourself, right? I mean, you're committing a sin by committing suicide. Mm-hmm. So the whole notion of suicide, especially for modern Western culture, is a huge deal. It's a really, really big issue.
And it's clearly, this story is really well done. It's clearly a puzzle, an intellectual and emotional puzzle, and just an instinctual puzzle for Janeway. She really struggles with it.
Yeah.
I loved when Delancey doubled himself. He said, I want to call a witness of the very esteemed me or something. And he snaps and there he is talking to himself. It was just very funny.
Yeah. So how easy was that for them to film that? Delancey actually crosses behind other Delancey, which I thought maybe that he wasn't allowed to do that. But
They probably filmed the Delancey who was in the background first, and they probably locked off the camera, is my guess. So that it was locked down very hard and, you know, didn't move.
Yeah.
And they filmed him in the background, probably with not even a chair or anything there. They probably rolled in a green, you know, eight foot by 10 foot green into that space and put a chair in front of it, and then sat John down and he did the seated portion separately. Right. And then they could put those together. But it is very tricky and very time consuming and hard to sometimes get a real, when you've got the same actor supposed to be looking at himself.
Yeah.
You're often guessing at the the eye lines there, you know, it doesn't quite line up with the distance and the angle that it should be. So to me, it was just a little bit off.
Yeah. And also, weren't we dealing at some point in the very beginning with blue screen before green screen? I think we were, I remember that. I mean, that we had blue screens. And
sometimes we'd have blue because the green is what they're looking for is just a really specifically unnatural color to sort of key off of so that the computer will look for the green color or the blue color that's not anywhere else in any fabrics or any skin tone or whatever. And then it will replace all of that green. But sometimes the light spill off of a green screen will make the actors look a little green or the wall look a little green or things like that. So they'll sometimes put a blue in there because it feels more natural that it spill, you know, the bounce of the light on the wall or something.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
I felt like I noticed a little green screen spill in the briefing room, which, by the way, they took out our briefing room table and put in the judge's chambers, you know, the judge's desk where Kate sat and the other two desks. And I just thought that was interesting because I've never seen our briefing room redecorated for any other episode until now. That's the first time I was like, oh, they literally moved it out. Like, I don't know what the logic of that is or where those tables came from.
Right.
On our ship. But that's the only time I've ever seen that room redressed in that way.
Huh. Okay. Also, back to Tuvok's quarters. And I know I'm going back a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous. He had a full size couch.
He had
sofa.
He had big quarters. He had a big.
I'm jealous of Tuvok's room. Big quarters, his big sofa.
You, by the way, said something. Speaking of innuendo. By the way, on the bridge and like that early scene goes, oh, that won't be a problem to penetrate, Captain. You had some line early on.
What?
It was the comet. She was like, Ensign, can you, isolate the below the crust of the comet and, you know, to beam it aboard? And we cut to you and you're like, no problem, Captain. That'll be easy to penetrate.
In this episode?
Yes. I was like, Garrett. I felt like you were giving it a little innuendo that was not appropriate. Okay. Not appropriate.
Was I ensign innuendo?
You were ensign innuendo.
Okay. I'm going to have to look for that. I did not see that, but I'll have to look for that.
By the way. Okay. So back to the trial.
Yes.
I forget who, I just wrote the note down, suicide versus capital punishment. You know, a society that condones and allows capital punishment, but yet outlaws suicide makes no sense, no logical sense. It might have been Tuvok in this thing. But I thought that was an interesting argument that like, there's just a lot of very interesting intellectual arguments. I think instinctually for me, my instinct is that human nature wants to, just from an animal place, we fight to survive. If someone throws us in the water, we try to swim. We don't, you know, we try to fight for
drown.
We don't just drown. Yeah, we fight for life. So I guess for me, this is just my perspective, I guess. It's hard for me to comprehend, choosing not to swim, I guess. You know, I understand it intellectually, but from like a just nature place, I wonder like, why wouldn't I want to keep trying to swim? Why wouldn't I want to? And so it's a puzzle. This is a tricky episode because intellectually I can understand some things that on an emotional or, you know, another level, I can't. It's very challenging.
Well, just watching this episode made me think of the famous Dr. Kevorkian, who was, assisting people who were terminally ill and in major pain. And he was basically going to their home and assisting their suicide, their death. And it was illegal. I think it's still illegal, isn't it, in this country?
Most states in America, it is illegal. I know it's not illegal, I think, in Oregon or Washington State. There's a handful of states where assisted suicide is legal. I know in other countries, in Europe and things, assisted suicide is legal. I'll say, again, this is just my opinion in a very complicated subject. Yeah. But my opinion is if someone is suffering from disease and there is, you know, you're in a hospice situation where there is no cure, there is only managing, you know, pain and distress and things like that.
Yeah.
I can understand the choice to want to have an easy death and to have a comfortable goodbye of your own choosing rather than letting nature do its ravages and drag someone through suffering. Or, you know, I've lost both of my parents to cancer. Yep. I'll be blunt. And cancer is just a horrible disease. And the suffering and the pain that I saw both of my parents go through, I would not wish on my worst enemy. So, you know, suffering and pain, if there's a way that we can help people, you know, with that, anyway, I'm very supportive of that intellectually and emotionally, you know, just being kind and limiting and minimizing suffering for anybody. And that I thought was interesting in this episode, because Janeway uses that argument. She says, you know, she says at one point, like, I need to be convinced of some kind of suffering that you're like, if you can just show me, you know, to Q2, show me where I don't see the suffering, but if you can show me, I could vote for you. I could, you know, I thought that was that came to my mind when that part was coming up. I thought having Frakes and Ginsburg and Isaac Newton pop in for their little cameos, I thought was really a lot of fun. And you know, Frakes in that one scene with his great, you know, great grandparent in the Civil War thing, I thought was very interesting. For me, the theme of this episode was about choices and how the most important choices that we make in life can be a complicated paradox, that there is no easy answers and that there are shades of gray in every experience that we have. Like, it's not that simple, just like this story of which Q is right and which Q is wrong, you know, is wanting death because of, or, you know, whatever, wanting whatever you want because you've had an experience and that's your experience. Is that good or bad or better or worse than what might seem noble, the other Q, Delancey's Q, Q1, wanting to say, no, suicide is bad. We have to protect him and our continuum and our culture. Mm-hmm. They seem noble if you just look at it quickly, but you look at it deeper and there's a lot. So there's nothing that is black and white. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Especially the more important, the more consequential the situation. Anyway, yes, that to me is the theme, is the paradox of no easy choice.
Now, on my theme, I always feel that it's similar to yours. I just said that I feel that we must be open to the fact that there are always exceptions to the rule, that there is always a gray area, and that the danger of being too hard line about something is that is the danger. You know, when you're saying, okay, this is the end all be all, this is the rule that we say, and there's gray area. There's always something, you know, you have to really take each case individually and dissect it and understand it before making that decision, you know? So, very, very complex episode. And it's great because at the very end, Q1, Delancey, actually is the person that provides Q2, Quinn, with the hemlock, which is nowhere on the ship. You know what I'm saying? So even that Q at the end, even though he lost, he was like, wow, I do see what you're saying. You know, let me help you. Let me assist you. He became the Kevorkian for Quinn in a way.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting episode. I think that it's also was fascinating to me. You know, so much got covered. It's impossible for us in this review to go through all of the arguments that were made, you know, as that trial closed out.
Right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They do go to the continuum. They see it's a road in the middle of a desert. They see an abandoned gas station, and it's pretty boring there. I mean, if that's their way of communicating what the continuum is, I get it. I get both Delancey's Q1 sort of, hey, it's utopia, it's peaceful, it's everything's good. I get that argument. I also get the, oh my God, I want to kill myself because there's nothing to live for anymore.
You've been there, done that. That line where he's like, we've all played the scarecrow. Like everyone's done everything in that continuum that can be done multiple times. And they're like, okay. So yeah.
Quinn says something like, well, there's nothing left to explore. It's just life is futile and meaningless and hopeless without anything left to explore. And the disease, he says the disease is, trying to relate it to disease for humans, like if someone got cancer, to be kind and allow them to commit assisted suicide if they had that sort of disease. He says our disease is immortality.
Yeah.
To him, that's the disease. I thought it was interesting that Q Delancey comes back and tries to offer to bribe her. Shows up in her quarters and says, look, there's Earth right there. Look what I'll give you if you just play our, whatever you want. Well, just let us win. I loved Janeway's line when he says, can we have a sidebar? Can we go to your quarters for a meeting as the trial's wrapping up? And she goes, you've been in my chambers enough for one visit, sir.
You have been in my chambers enough, sir.
Yeah, I think that I think it was interesting that Janeway chose to allow Q2 Quinn to win this argument and to be granted his mortality so that he can kill himself. But I think she did it really believing that she could sell him on, now that you're a human, you have the ability to have all these new experiences and all these amazing treasures that the human experience. And she even convinced me in the story. I was like, oh, wow. Clever move, Janeway. Like, that's nice move. You gave him what he wanted, but it seems like we're going to get a happy ending here.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised that it wasn't a happy ending, that, the doctor calls him up and that Q Delancey, Q, is the one that provided this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fascinating. A fascinating story. Very.
Yeah. Very it's a episode. Thinker, people. This is a thinker episode. All right, I'd just like to quickly mention, once again, for those of you that are listening that are not our Patreon patrons, Patreon will offer bonus material that you can listen to. And you can get that bonus material by going to patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers and subscribing today.